Good morning, everybody. I'm Bill Dance. If you love fishing as much as I do, you're really going to like listening to my old buddy, Luke Clayton, for the next hour.
Thanks, Bill. This is David Fox, and welcome to Outdoors with Luke Clayton and Friends. Luke has been a recognized outdoors writer for the past 3 decades and writes for a host of outdoor publications. Luke pens a weekly newspaper outdoors column that appears in over 40 Texas newspapers and is on the pro staff of Gearhead Archery, Air Force Air Guns, Sightmark, Smoking Tech's Electric Smokers, and feel free to contact Luke through his website, catfishradio.org. Now let's join Luke and his guest for this week's show.
Welcome to Campfire Talk with me, Larry Wasson, of course, your host, Luke Clayton. Luke and I have been doing this for a while, and we've got some absolutely great sponsors, but I need to also add that DSC, Dallas Safari Club, Conservation Education, and the Hunter Advocacy, Hornady, Accurate, Diddly, Dependable, TRHP Outdoors, makers of the Scent Guardian, and now also a new product called Boat Wash, and then also Taurus, who builds the Taurus Raging Hunter. Luke, last week we were talking about some of the early adventures, going back to some of our really early years kind of thing. You know, but we were just about getting started talking about some of our hunting and fishing adventures, and then we ran out of time. So what say we pick up from there?
That's good, Larry. Yeah, and I've got six or eight emails from last week's show talking about they enjoyed hearing how Luke and Larry started off back in the 60s when we were boys, you know. Yeah, but we talked about a lot of things, but the hunting and the fishing, that was a part of both of our lives from the time we were big enough to follow our mentors around, wasn't it, Larry? It was for me, and I know it was for you.
You're right. Honestly, I get asked a lot of times, tell me about your first time you went hunting or fishing. And Luke, you know what? I really can't remember that first time for either one because, I mean, I grew up out in the country and I had a maternal granddad that thought a red-haired, freckled-faced grandson was the finest thing in the world. And so he'd come by and we'd go fishing every morning back even before member serves me. And the same thing with my dad. My dad loved hounds and horses and loved to hunt, and did my mom. So, you know, I was hunting and fishing before I can even remember going back that far.
Yeah, and me too. I cannot remember the first time that I hunted and fished. I was probably, you know, I was out there raised right by, I mean, I could, and I know it was this way with you, but I could walk out the door and in, you know, 3 minutes, I was walk across the pasture. I was in the woods, you know, but I remember so much about some of the people. We had a gentleman called Mr. D. Shazier, and I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right, but I don't know what country he was from, him and his wife, Mr. D. Shazier, that's what he was called. Well, he had a little log, see, it's back in the 60s, but he had a log room, just a little, I won't call it a cabin, it's built out of logs, it was, I don't know, it's probably 10 by 12. That was his trapping room. He was a trapper, a really small gentleman, but very, very nice and kind guy, but a trapper. He was catching mink on a regular basis back in those days, and I remember him telling me that, you know, you can get $30-$40 for a mink,
which was a huge amount of money.
Oh my gosh, he would tell me that and I'd think, wow, you know. So he was kind of he let me follow him around sometime, and you know, I'd say help him, I don't know, carry stuff for him and back in the woods, and I'd watch him, you know, how he'd always get me a good distance away when he would make a set. Not so much for coons and you know, possum and stuff like that. But when he's doing his mink sets, he'd always stand me off out there about 50 feet, you know. Don't come up. He didn't want to contaminate the area, you know.
No, he didn't want to send up that area, right?
Yeah, so, you know, things like that. This guy, well, in the 60s, he was an old man. I mean, the things that he – where was he from? I mean, you know, I have no earthly idea. I know that they had moved into Red River County. You know, they weren't natives there. But things like that in the people that I got to know, and I know that with your German descent, you were probably exposed to all kind of crafts, and, you know, like we was talking about making sauerkraut and things like that. I know all your people had to, and sausage and all that kind of stuff, things that that what I like to do just for, I don't have to do it, but I just want to, you know, I've always liked to learn about things like that, the old way of doing things, you know?
You know what? You're right. And one of these days, if something goes all to heck, you know, you and I, and of course our kids that we passed on some of these things, will know how to do these things. But you're right. I grew up in a very self-sufficient time, if you will. Mm-hmm. We were in the cattle business, hog business, chicken business. We had our own gardens. We hunted and fished a lot. And, you know, I remember, you know, we talked in the past about hog hunting a lot. Well, we didn't have wild hogs. We had hogs. And, you know, we made a lot of bacon and a lot of ham and a lot of sausage. And I mm-hmm. can remember, too, at a time back when electricity was out in our area, but it wasn't real trustworthy. And so even some of those old timers that I grew up around, what they would do is when they'd butcher a hog or even a steer, they would go ahead and render the lard off the hog, and then they would fry the like steaks, you know, or pieces of meat, and then they'd pour a little bit of lard in a big old cast, a big old crock, you know,
yep.
earthenware crock, and then start piling that fried meat in there, pour more lard on it, and it would keep for a long, long time, you know, without any kind of refrigeration. And these days, my gosh, when my freezer goes out, I'm in a huge panic because
yeah.
I don't know where I want to put all that. You know, that kind of led to the same thing. Deer, we hunted starting November 16th, which back then was opening day of deer season, before we had bow seasons or anything mm-hmm. else. And you know, we hunted hard, and if you saw a dadgum deer track, you talked about it. If you saw a deer, you were kind of a hero. If you shot a deer back then, you were a huge hero kind of thing. And generally we ended up, you know, you were very protective of your meat, but you always ended up sharing it with a bunch of the neighbors because mm-hmm. they like deer meat too, and they may go, you know, may not kill deer that season. So it's been kind of interesting watching all this kind of develop over the years to where we had virtually no deer in that part of the world, to where we had way too many deer. And now with the management programs going on, thanks to the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department and of course a lot of landowners and hunters, we've got a really good stable population that, you know, is going to be around for a long, long time in the future.
That's true, Larry. And, you know, looking back, I really didn't have any deer hunting mentors. Well, I had some guys. My brother-in-law, for instance, was a huge squirrel, one of the best squirrel hunters I've ever seen, and a good hunter, a good woodsman. But he grew up, you know, say in 1958 when I was eight
right.
years old. He was 20-something years old, 22. A young man. So he didn't grow. There were no deer up in
right.
Northeast Texas. I won't say no, but there were very few deer up there.
There were, yes. If there were, there were very few.
Very few, yes. So he didn't acquire the deer hunting skills, you know. But I remember getting off the old school bus in November. You know, I think it was like the 16th or whenever that season opened.
That's when it used to
yeah,
open, November 16th.
We'd go up. My dad would take me to Red River County Courthouse, and you'd get your permit for $3 mm-hmm. or whatever it was. So I'd get off the school bus. I'd grab a piece of bread or cornbread or a sweet potato or something like that and eat that real quick, and then take my old Mossberg Bolt Action 410 loaded with a rifle slug, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Now, I never shot a deer with that, and probably don't remember ever seeing a deer, but I would go back to the pecan bio. Now we're talking 8 years old here, Larry. I mean,
mm-hmm.
but I knew you couldn't get me lost back there.
No. You knew every bit of that.
I did.
I know what you're saying.
Yes. You know, I could not get lost. So, you know, they didn't think anything about that. Now, did I kill a deer? I didn't see a deer most of the time, but I'd be, you know, that was my early, indoctrination to deer hunting. I knew I had to get hid, you know, and I'd get back in the brush by myself always, and they didn't, my dad, he didn't want any group hunting with us kids. He, now you can go out there, son, and you know, but I don't want you, you know, he knew what 8-10 year old boys were like, you know, but that was my marching orders. Go back there by yourself and hunt and then come straight home. So, but that, yeah, that's early. That was, but that just made me want to hunt deer more. It whetted something in me. And then when we started seeing, having deer, I was in literally in hog heaven, Larry, I'll tell you.
I appreciate the feeling. I started out, every once in a while somebody said, well, Larry, what was your first deer rifle? And I'm sure they're thinking it was a, you know, 30-30, 30-06, 270, one of those. And I go, it was a single shot, 22 long, you know, rimfire, long rifle, and which that time was totally legal when I first started hunting. So my dad had dropped me off at a deer stand, and generally that meant a 2x4 or a 2-inch piece of cedar limb, kind of nailed onto the bark of a tree, and you kind of crawled up there and you sat there and you watched, you know, kind of thing. And man, I can remember seeing my first, I do remember seeing my first deer while I was hunting. I was hunting on a little pipeline right away, and with a lot of what we call wolf weed back then, and this doe came by, and of course it's illegal, so I couldn't shoot it. At that time we just could only shoot park antlered bucks or better. And I remember that doe coming by, and I could see, you know, I could see her head and her neck, and my God, my rifle went up, and I tracked her all the way through until she disappeared, kind of thing, and you know, hoping a buck would follow. And of course, no, there wasn't another buck. And I think that year, that I saw one other deer toward the tail end of the hunting season between Christmas and New Year's when I was, you know, home from school, kind of thing. So it's amazing how those things changed, and including the fact that now 22 rimfires are highly illegal in most states.
Exactly. Yeah, it's interesting looking back on really a totally different era of life. And then people look back, oh, thank y'all had it made back then. Well, you know, I mean, we were I would say an average family, and definitely not wealthy, but you know, we had enough of everything. But times, air conditioning, zero air conditioning, until I was 12, there was no, we did not have a telephone until I was 12 also. That's the truth. So, I mean, it was a whole different lifestyle.
Well, our first telephone is, I grew up out in the country, as I mentioned. Our first home, it was an old log cabin that had been built onto. When I was 6 years old, my mom and dad built the house that they lived or spent their lives in, kind of thing. And it wasn't until a little bit after we built that house that we got our first telephone, and it was one of those old crank type phones
with
a 40 line and all those kind of things. So it has truly changed the last several years.
Well, Larry, I've enjoyed reminiscing. I hope our friends listening all over, I hope they did too. We'll get together next weekend here at our campfire talk, and maybe continue talking about the old times, or maybe talk about a current hunt. Who knows?
Absolutely.
Yep, folks, Larry has been with us every week for the past 13 years, and we're looking forward to the next 13 years. I want to leave two websites with you right here, folks, and I want you to check them out. UltramaticFeeders.com. My buddy Carl Harmon makes the best line of game feeders in the world. I've used them for, gosh, 18 or 20 years now. If you're interested in shooting powerful big bore air guns, hunting with them, the Texan by Air Force Air Guns cannot be beat. I've used them since they actually came out. AirForceAirGuns.com. You can check them out right there. And of course, they have 25 calibers, 22 calibers, lighter calibers, but that Texan is a powerhouse, and I want you to check it out.